Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today at AU Central and for those of you who have joined us online. We must inform you today that the Lunch and Learn is being recorded via Luminate Live, and the presentation will be posted on the Research Center website, also AU Space for anyone who wishes to view it at a later date. And of course, anyone at AU Central, please use the microphones to ask any questions so the online people can hear you. It's my pleasure now to hand the microphone over to Dr. Stella George, who will start off today's presentation, who is also in AU Calgary. Stella, please.
Thanks, Alice. As Alice said, I'm Stella George, and I'm presenting here today with Professor Janice Thomas. Both of us normally work out of our home offices near Calgary, but today we're presenting from AU Calgary offices. We're beginning to talk about our experiences in the management of a large-scale collaborative research project that we were both involved with, that Janice led, and I was administrative help for. Over the period 2004 to 2008 and a little bit on from that, but we'll talk about when to determine an end point for these things as we get further into the talk. So today, let's see, move this slide on. There we go. So today we're going to cover a little bit about who we are and why we're presenting this talk and why we're presenting it now. What we're talking about in general in terms of collaboration and our experiences in particular over the VALUE project. We would believe that we could give you some idea about what you can expect if you're going to take on a project like this, and some understanding of why you would take on a project such as this one. So who are we? As you can see by our AU emails, Janice, we're regular AU staff. Janice is the director of the Project Management Research Institute and is a faculty member of the Faculty of Business and also on the Ethics Subcommittee. She was also the principal investigator for the case study that we're going to look at today, the Researching the Value of Project Management project. And I'm the research manager at the Project Management Research Institute, and I was an administrative help and a researcher on the VALUE project. As we move on, I'll give you a little bit of insight into what the Project Management Research Institute is and how that links to what we're doing. PIMRI was established as one of the four research institutes at AU on the back of matched funds from the VALUE project. It's a new type of research institute where we're looking to leverage the virtual environment and digital media as much as we can possibly do, because the researchers involved in project management are worldwide and in a large network. So it's very important to have a virtual aspect to that, linking up these researchers and advanced practitioners as well. The Project Management Research Institute is providing leadership in what can be done in this approach for project management. But also, because we're at AU, we're in a most excellent position to provide communication technologies to allow people to meet up and keep in contact and move things forward. So one of the major goals of PIMRI is to keep this community built and keep it moving on and collaborating, even when it isn't meeting at the conferences throughout the year. We're also looking to stimulate this group of people in collaboration and to openly examine the challenges that we see in project management and the solutions that we know are out there, that advanced practitioners know are out there, as well as to focus on making sure that research knowledge really does get transferred into practice. I'm sure I've missed something. So why are we presenting this talk right now? Well, we think that the time is right to talk a bit more about collaborative research. Plus, we have a lot of experience to share, and we thought that it was a good time to share that. Some research questions really demand collaborative practice. That's not to say that collaborative research doesn't have its issues, and we will discuss that through our experiences. But some research questions really do need to be looked at in a collaborative way. Plus, AU is very well suited to support collaborative practice in a research in a virtual way. It has the technology, it has experience, and it has vision on how these things might work together. And through work such as in the other research institute, TechRe, they're pushing the boundaries of where things can go, and the distance education is also looking at how to link in technology. So through all the aspects of what AU is doing, we're in a position where we can start to link these things together and make them really work well. Economically, there is less travel available to researchers, and a requirement to do things as quickly as possible, a more immediate response time. And so we think looking at this sort of connection and support virtually is going to ease some of the financial issues of researchers being able to not being able to travel, and also in order to get them to communicate real time quickly so that they can move on with their research. Some research questions really do need multiple views. Single viewpoints and panacea don't really exist in social science research. There are many perspectives that can be taken on the work, and we think that collaborative research, well, literature shows that collaborative research is one of the major pushes in a social science area, and social science is in fact one of the areas which does push it, but still experiences some problems. The other major motivation is that funding agencies are beginning to ask for collaborative and interdisciplinary work even more. In 2007, Glyde stated in the Journal of Research Admin that interdisciplinary has become the model of scholarly inquiry generally espoused by many who seek federal funding. And our national funding agencies and others around the world, including the NIH in the USA, share similar perspectives on research collaboration. All three of the funding agencies have initiated new funding approaches that stress collaboration and interdisciplinary presences within the grant applications that are made. And so we can see that the focus has been shifting to encourage and facilitate multi-directional flow of research knowledge, as they say. They're also looking to community and partnering with industry. This has been present in the grants for the funding agencies, but it seems now that it might be more than just bringing in external dollars, and it's looking for more of a participatory role than a stakeholder role, as may have been in the past. Only time is going to tell how these things actually play out and move on, but the larger, higher funded research projects such as SHRC's MCRI necessarily require a collaborating team of researchers. And I would say that we're going to look at the different types of collaboration in a minute, but they seem to be looking for interdisciplinary rather than multidisciplinary in their approach. So the other reason why now is a good time for us to talk about this is because we have participated, and Janice has run this Researching the Value of Project Management project. And the project ran May 2004 to August 2008, and then a little bit further on, and we'll talk about that. It was initially funded through the Project Management Institute, which is the largest project management professional body to promote research grants. But this is a special initiative that they had that was a large scale bid. If you couple that with the donations in kind of time, because the researchers' time was not paid for by the project, and the expenses around the project, we're looking in the region of $3.2 million. So it was a large project over a four-year time period. There were two principal investigators for this grant, Janice and Mark Mullally, who is well known in the project management field and comes from a practitioner perspective. So we're bringing in a very academic and a very practitioner perspective on what needed to happen in this grant and how different approaches might be used. Alongside the two principal investigators, there were 48 research co-investigators. This is by no means a small team. The academics and organisations involved in this project came from five continents and over 20 universities. And one of the things that these 48 researchers brought were a range of experience in over 10 management disciplines. As I said, none of the participants' time was paid for by the project. All the organisations that participated did so for their own interest. So if we look a little bit more at AU's strengths, we can see that it's not just that we have present technology to help us with interdisciplinary and multidisciplinary approaches, but that AU itself has a history of multidisciplinary and interdisciplinary cooperation. Through its own evolution, AU has necessarily been collaborative in its use of its intellectual resource. So building first multidisciplinary, that's putting people together, and then leading an edge into interdisciplinary, where people are focusing together on a research problem. Collaboration has occurred in distance education, master's programs, MAES, the MBA. So it's been inherent, this cooperative way of working has been inherent in the way that AU's master's level courses have come about. Through this change, AU has developed uses of technology and research, and TechRe has come into existence. And all of the research institutes support some type of collaboration. If you think about in TechRe, you've got computer science, software, hardware, social media, psychology around learning, distance education. It's a very current position on how this work is just in the nature of what we do at AU and the capabilities of what we can do at AU. So in preparing the bid for the value project, there's awareness around AU's position in working with teams at a distance that made some of the insights in the bid probably more insightful than PMI had seen before. Plus, there's a nature at AU to be able to manage the financial and contractual obligations within such a large project with delegated jobs that many other universities may not have been able to actually cope with. So it was felt that AU was actually a very strong, strong benefit, and gave us an advantage in putting forward a bid such as this. So in general terms, what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about interdisciplinary research. So research involving researchers from two or more disciplines. It requires the pooling of approaches and the modification of the approaches to address the emerging problems. So you're looking at creating a joint methodology in how to approach a problem, as well as different perspectives in understanding, analysing and sense making of the results. So it's interdisciplinary research is looking to provide new insights into the research that goes on. In our case, project management challenges appear very different when you examine them from a different number of perspectives, whether it's cost engineering, organisational behaviour, contract law, operations management, complexity theory. There are many perspectives that truly impact understanding what's going on in project management. So in our case, the motivation for involving researchers from different disciplines was absolutely apparent. So if we take a step back and look at what is meant by collaborative research, in interdisciplinary research and multidisciplinary research and also transdisciplinary research are a part of collaborative research. So we're looking at still two or more researchers working together, a group of researchers working together. Each in that group must bring something to the research, whether it's their own expertise, whether it's access that other researchers might not have, that's access to data, to organisations or to people, to equipment. And often what researchers bring in a big team is they bring their own time. So a large project, for instance, may actually need some parallelism. So the work was only actually going to be able to be done if you can have a whole team of people working on the issue at the same time. And in the case of our project, it's global, so time was a major issue, but also geography came in there. There's clearly a lot involved in setting up collaborative research and working in this way. And so motivation to work collaboratively and manage people and time and access and keep everybody on the same page and focusing on the same task. Motivation to do this and a real motivation for why you need to work in this way is essential. So what are we talking about? If we look at the Value project as an example, I'm going to hand over to Janice so that she can tell us all about it.
Welcome, good afternoon. Thank you for spending your lunch hour with us. I hope you're having a good lunch. I've had a lovely muffin at my end. Luckily someone thought to bring food here. The Value project was huge. We've given you an idea of its size. I'm going to talk you through some of the management challenges around it and the issues that come up in managing this team. So I'm not going to talk too much about the actual research and what we did. I've given that presentation before, but I will touch on a few things just to give you an idea of what we were attempting to do and why it was necessary to do it in this kind of a format. One of the questions I get is, 48 academics, you've got to be kidding. You know, why would you try to manage 48 academics? Well, one of the main reasons was that PMI, who was providing the funding for the study, wanted it to be global. And they in particular wanted to be able to look at China and South America and other areas of the globe. So we had to involve researchers from around the world because of cultural issues and challenges and language challenges and so forth. It simply wasn't possible to do the research without having colleagues in these countries. And in terms of a linear time horizon, we wouldn't have been able to carry out the work, as Stella pointed out, if we didn't package it up into smaller packages and work on it all at the same time. We needed the research expertise in disciplines and methods. I am trained as an economist and in social, cultural, qualitative methods in my PhD program, but all because I'm trained in so many, I have sometimes a shallow understanding of all rather than a deep understanding. So to get the deep understanding of the theoretical perspectives, the disciplines and the methods that we were looking at, we needed to have people who specialized in those areas. And finally, the subject matter, when you talk about value, is a very tricky question to research that's been tackled in many management disciplines, often unsatisfactorily. Often because one perspective was taken to the data or to the research. And so the limitations of that one perspective are huge in magnitude when looked at from another perspective. So what we were trying to do by setting this up as a interdisciplinary study was to tackle the objections and limitations of earlier research by getting more people involved, thinking about it in more different ways, and collecting the data to allow each of these to provide the insights to make help us make sense of the question. So how tricky is this question? Well, PMI has been around for about 40 years, and they have been studying how to get senior executives interested in project management. What's the value of project management? What's the value statement? You know, why do we do it? For at least 20 of those years. They sponsored several research studies over the 12 years between 1990 and 2002 with very inconclusive and unsatisfactory results for their membership. So they were particularly keen. It's a particularly important question for them to answer, but all of their prior attempts had not succeeded. And if you look in the management literature in IT, in finance, and accounting, and HR, and training, and in a number of other disciplinary areas, you'll find that all of the studies that had undertaken to try and evaluate the value of training or the value of finance or the value of TQM had ended up with similar results. So it's a pretty tricky question to answer from a number of perspectives. Why is it tricky? Lots of reasons. Largely because the baseline data doesn't exist. Organizations would like to know what's the value of something, but they often start improving it before they actually know where they're at. So it's very difficult to do before and after measures. It takes longitudinal research with interventions, action research based often, and that's not something that's done very often. Organizations focus on making changes quickly, isolating the impacts of changes in organizational training or in organizational project management is very hard to isolate from other changes that are going on at the same time in an organization. It's not a closed system that you can experiment with. It's an open system, and it's a complex open system. And often the measures are not seen as credible because it's very difficult to get concrete measures of improved corporate culture or improved leadership. And while you might be able to get measures of improved profit share or profit margin because it's difficult to isolate where those improvements are coming from, executives often see those results as best guesses. So it's a very tricky question to answer. And so the motivation for this collaborative research is essential. Stella raised that as the number one point in the conclusion of her speaking. Our motivation was we needed to collect rigorous, solid data from organizations across a broad industrial and geographic area. We needed to enable the comparability of the results across organizations. So much of this data had to be collected by the researchers so we would know what we were collecting and what we were analyzing. We wanted to provide statistically significant and convincing results and cross-corroboration of researcher interpretation. When we're working with 48 academics on 18 research teams, we have to be sure that we are actually talking the same language and doing the same thing. And ultimately, because the money was coming from an outside funder, we had to provide concrete and timely deliverables. And the Project Management Institute actually wanted project management deliverables on a time schedule that they could plan their work and professional and organizational life around. So how did we do that? We built a strong multidisciplinary team from around the world, many disciplines, practical and academic researchers included. We had industry people as well as academics. We addressed the potential problems of earlier research. We did a massive literature search across the value of organizational innovations or interventions to see what's been done, how it's been done, what were the problems with what's been done, and see if we can address those concerns. We situated the phenomenon of project management within the organization. So we wanted to understand the context within which project management was being implemented in the organization to try as best as we could to identify the other innovations and interventions that were going on at the same time. And we wanted to create common, defensible, credible measures of costs and benefits. Now, the key question when you start a collaborative research project, particularly one of this size, is who are you going to involve? How do you pick the people to work with you? So it's pretty easy to say everyone on the team had to have something to contribute. And some people contributed different things. Some of the senior academics contributed access, and the junior academics contributed much more in the way of time and actually data collection and so forth. But everybody was recognized and acknowledged for what they brought to the table. We made the conscious decision early that we didn't want, we knew this was going to be politically and personally difficult for all team members, so we wanted to eliminate the problems of difficult personalities. I think in any discipline there are some people who are brilliant, but nobody can work with them, and those people were not invited to participate. We felt we needed some sort of a relationship before starting the project, so we only invited people that we actually knew something about their work, and often that we knew personally in some way, or that someone we knew personally, to be able to start building the collaborative team. The two key promises we made to everyone as we asked them to join this team was that we would make it as fun, stimulating, and challenging as possible, and given the global, international nature of the team, we would attempt to inconvenience everyone equally. I think our Chinese colleagues would say that we never actually made it to China, so we didn't quite succeed on that level, but we had meetings in Canada and in Europe and in various time zones and at different times of the day to try and include more people and more offers. This project had a large number of key stakeholders. PMI clearly gave us money and wants a defensible, objective answer, and they wanted it to be global, and managing that particular stakeholder was almost a full-time job. AU was building a research reputation. They wanted a success. They wanted to support the success, and they wanted to be able to show that we could manage a project of this size. We have two principal investigators with obvious interests. We have the team leads, 18 of them, and all the disparate researchers who want access to the data, publishable research, good experiences. We have all the other academic institutions or employers who are paying for the time with these people, and they want value for the time invested. We had all the participating organizations who wanted to understand their practice and contribute to understanding of the more generalized practice. And finally, the PMI members, 350,000 of them strong, felt they had a pretty vested interest in this research project, having paid with their membership dues a significant amount of money. And anywhere we went, we were clearly and consistently questioned by them as to what they were getting for their money, and how much did we learn, and when did we learn it, and how do we get this information to them on a timely basis? Risky? Yes. Any large-scale collaborative interdisciplinary project is going to be risky, and this one was certainly that. The first question on any project you have to ask is, can you achieve what you set out to achieve? Value had never been satisfactorily studied, particularly from the perspective of the practitioners or the professional agencies. Academics can study it and be quite satisfied by saying that they learned something and there are significant limitations to the research, but this is what we did, this is what we learned, and this is what we couldn't figure out. Practitioners are not so satisfied with that kind of a study. Multiple approaches and associated conflicts and incommensurability. In interdisciplinary research, some would say it's impossible because of incommensurability of paradigms and so forth. When you try and bring together people who think very differently, who approach issues in different ways, who don't necessarily recognize the existence of an objective reality with those that believe everything is quantifiable and measurable given the right tools, you can imagine that that's a pretty risky proposition when you have contractually committed to deadlines and time frames to deliver. Had a huge team with many diverse interests, many different stakeholders. The level of PI authority over the participants was non-existent. If you're a project manager and you go into leading a highly complex team like this, you want to have the authority and the levers and the funding mechanisms and all of the different tools and techniques at your beck and call to be able to get things done. As the principal investigators on this project, we were leading a volunteer team, and we had very few levers very little authority over the participants, very little way to guarantee that people would do what they said they were going to do when they said we were going to do it, even though we used a number of different contractual methods to try and attain that. The scheduling unpredictability and change. We were doing an exploratory research study, starting with the very exploratory and moving all the way through to trying to deliver concrete, statistically significant results over a four-year period with a volunteer team. Clearly a risky project. Our strategy was to start by decreasing the uncertainty around the project and increasing the knowledge through the lifespan of the project. We conceptualized it as two phases. The first phase was figuring out how we would do it and whether it's actually doable. And there's a red line, the first short red line there is the decision point where we decided with PMI that we felt we could answer most of the questions that they wanted from us and decided to proceed with the second phase, which was the exploratory analysis, trying to quantify and measure and develop theories about how investments in project management deliver value to organizations. The last bit of theory testing was something that wasn't included in the scope of the project. You can see the red writing throughout the chart. We started with the proposal back in, I think it went in August 31st of 2004. In November, Thanksgiving Day American, in November, we were notified that we had won the bid. They had 45 bids, of which they asked for three full proposals. And from the three proposals, they chose our proposal. Contract negotiations went on for 6 months. We had proposed in the project that we would start on January 1st if we were awarded it. The contract was signed on May 27th. Our first workshop happened in June of that year, so 3 weeks after the contract was signed. So we had significant uncertainty around that. We're trying to schedule an international meeting with academics from around the world in a location in England because some of our participants couldn't be there any other way without knowing that we actually had a signed contract or had money in hand. So there was some significant uncertainty to be dealt with at the earlier stages of the project in terms of getting it started. We did some pilot studies. The first workshop was about conceptual development, getting everyone to be able to talk to each other and listen to each other. We did some pilots around data collection. Workshop two was, do we really think we can do this or not? Workshop three was, here's what we've got done so far. This is the data we've collected. This is the analysis. This is the findings we're starting to see. And workshop four was, okay, let's make sense of this. What have we learned? What have we done? So that's what the project looked like. Sorry, my button there. There you can see one of our workshops. This is how most of the important part of the meeting of the collaboration was built. I think you can see Mimi Hirsch, who used to work for AU there. She has a glass of wine. If you were with me, I would hope that I'm hearing some laughter. The challenges of this kind of a project that we dealt with, the finances. We had contracts with more than 18 researchers for research grants. The main research grant came into AU, and from that we provided research grants through a proposal-based selection system to 18 individuals who led teams to collect data in countries far from us. Getting the contract signed by our university was reasonably straightforward once we figured out what we needed to do, and with finance group and the research group were hugely important and successful and helpful in getting that done. On the other side, they had to go through the university contracting processes, and that was a challenge. Expenses. At the time we signed the contract, the US-Canadian expense rate was 40, transfer rate was 45% to the good for Canada. That was the first payment. So one-third of the money came in with a 40% budget. To the good for me, because I budgeted everything in Canadian dollars and then proposed it in American dollars, so I had some contingency. By the time the project ended, it was about 3% to the bad for Canada. So over the, and that was only one part of it. The money came in that way, but then we had to pay expenses to people in England or in China, and the exchange rates changed. And sometimes they put in for $150 worth of pounds of expenses, and by the time they got the money, it was really only 120 pounds worth, and they had to pay bank rate exchange because we had sent the money in Canadian dollars and their bank charged them a fee for that. All these kinds of administrative challenges of working with a global team were not things that I had considered in any way, shape, or form that became quite challenging. In terms of people, people are always a challenge in project management, and this was particularly true here. We had a volunteer team working at a distance. We had a core team of, I'd say, 8 to 10 people. And maintaining the momentum of that team throughout a almost 5-year journey, keeping people interested, keeping people involved, getting them to actually deliver on their commitments when the other new shiny projects were coming their way, was a challenge. The other thing is that once you've been working with a team of a large number of people, building a culture, building a language, building a way of working together, incorporating new team members into the project at the 2-year mark was particularly difficult. They didn't have the history, they didn't have the understanding, they didn't understand how we, our norms and our protocols. With such a large team, the time for sharing, for collegiality, decreased as the work demands increased. So earlier in the project, the first workshop was really about getting to know you, if you want to think about it. Getting the team together, getting people to understand each other, respect each other, and move us forward. If you missed those early phases of the project and we were trying to incorporate people into the later phases when we were up against deadlines, critical deadlines, the work was not coming as well as we'd like it. People are getting tired. People are important. They have their own jobs, their own requests and universities. So maintaining the focus on a project of this size, at a distance, with volunteer team members, all of whom hold positions in universities that keep them particularly busy, was particularly trying. On top of that, the magnitude of the data management task was somewhat underestimated. In the end, we collected, I think, 685 interviews. I can't even remember how many surveys at the moment. We have about a terabyte of data. The capture translation, we had to translate Chinese data into English data. We had to get it submitted. We had to get it into the computer. We had to figure out how to make sure everybody knew what the data instruments were asking to collect so that we had some comparable data. And ultimately, we had difficulty in enrolling the organizations and participating. Many organizations would pull out halfway through, which causes us problems with data collection. It was a lot of time we were asking, not only from our researchers, but also from our organizations. So getting organizational participation in a timely manner was tricky. The research independence issue comes into question when you're receiving a grant from an external agency like PMI. We not only received the money from them, we actually had key management people from PMI engaged in every workshop, so they got to see the good, the bad, and the ugly of getting people to work together. And that was a bigger management task than we had anticipated in just managing the relationship with the fund provider. I imagine some of my colleagues who have had SHRC or NSERC grants might be willing to comment on that at the end of the presentation about whether that's just as big a challenge there. And finally, we have an interdisciplinary team doing collaborative research. The cross-disciplinary sense-making, the capacity to argue without anger, the capacity to agree to disagree and to work through that to find ways of agreeing is a time-consuming process that needs to have time allocated to it to allow all the views to be heard, to allow everyone to have participated in the activity. In terms of what really helped us get it done, Some would say blind faith, optimism, and luck. We counted good enough attendance. Not everybody could make every meeting or every commitment, and so we had to let some of our perfectionist tendencies fall by the wayside. Brainstorming and sense-making that went on long into the night over beer and wine was particularly helpful. We didn't necessarily need the beer or the wine, but we did seem to need the long into the night in one physical location periodically to support it. Personal contact and telephone check-ins when we were at a distance, phoning people up, having virtual coffee breaks, making sure that this project stayed top of mind, making sure that the next deadline for this project stayed top of mind. Increasing the project in the principal investigator's management role. I had hoped by hiring management, project management staff and admin staff, I could play more of a researcher role on this project, but given the level of management tasks that needed to be done, many of them, while I would have liked to have delegated them, I actually had to do myself. And so if you take on the principal investigator role, you have to realize that even with the best support from the research office you can get and the best administrative and research and project management support, you're going to need to spend an awful lot of time in administrivia. Hiring help. You've got to have the funds in the budget to hire the help that you need. Make sure you plan for a project manager and some research assistance help. Change the plan. Plan isn't working, fix it. And finally, you're going to have to rely on people stepping up and sometimes some ultimate heroism. In our team, the quantitative analysis team didn't get the data 2 months before the final workshop. They got it 2 days before the final workshop. And in a week during the final workshop, they managed heroically to put together some pretty surefire quantitative analysis that really helped us move forward. We couldn't have done it without them. Lessons learned. You need the right team. You need to provide everyone on that team opportunities to shine. If you have a team of 48 academics, every one of them has an ego, and every one of them is an expert in something. And every one of them needs the opportunity to be the best at something and to move the project forward and to help. And it will be the principal investigator's role to help figure that out. The opportunities for collaboration, you can do a lot of it at a distance, and we can talk to you about how to do that more effectively, we think, or at least we can tell you what doesn't work. But you need those opportunities face-to-face early in the project, for sure, to get this happening. That would be my assessment and what most of the virtual teaming literature suggests. Participation in decision-making, is that a good idea? Don't know. It's a challenge. We tried to make every decision participatory. We asked for input. We tried to do Delphi studies of some key design issues. What we found is that the participation came from a very few. And eventually we gave up trying to get all 48 people to participate in all decisions. We gave them the chance, but we didn't wait for them. And we had a core of 8 or 10 people who consistently participated in more of those decisions. The team maintenance around conflict resolution, tiredness, access, showing up, integrating new members is something that needs to be consciously recognized and planned for. People don't work in teams just because you put them in a room together. It's work that needs to be managed by the principal investigator. And just because you have a group of high-powered academics who are very good at what they do doesn't mean that they're very good at working together. The issues of intellectual property are key. In our study, each of the individual team leads owned the intellectual property and data around their set of data and contributed that set to the global data set, which is owned, if you will, in quotation marks, by the two principal investigators and not the sponsor. The data is separate, and the data is to be made available to researchers for use in the future. But somebody had to own it, and so that needs to be worked out, how you're going to manage that. Largely, it's your sense of humor, your ability to be playful, and from my perspective, having a co-lead that's going to save your sanity. You need to think this is fun, and you need to make it fun any way you can, and you need to have someone that you can give it to when you simply can't deal with it anymore. I don't think I could have managed it on my own. Here's another of our working groups. You can see that people are getting a little stressed, waving their arms around, listening, not listening. So what can you expect if you take on this type of project? All kinds of management challenges. I'm pretty sure I've talked about all of them. Some of the key ones are the transparency around expectations and findings. In May of 2005, I went to a Project Management International meeting, and one of the directors of the Project Management Institute came up to me and asked me what my findings were. And his expectations were that the project had been ongoing since at least January, if not November, when we were told we had the contract. And I didn't even have a contract yet signed. So managing the expectations around when things are coming out, what's coming out, who's doing what, how are things going to come out is critical. The contractual obligations was interesting. You can give people a research grant, give them a timeline in that research grant, pay them half up front. Don't, for heaven's sakes, pay them more than half up front. You need to give them enough money to get started, but you need to have some lever to actually try and get them to finish. Some of my colleagues did not finish and never did deliver data to the study, and that was a learning that surprised me. I thought once people had committed and signed a contract and had some intellectual integrity on the line that I wouldn't have problems with people just simply not doing the work, but I did, and you probably will too. The people you least expect will likely let you down, and the people you least expect will likely step up and help. The final one that might be a bit interesting is, when does it end? You might have heard Stella allude to this. We're in, 2011 now. Is it over? I'm not sure. We're still working on papers out of it, and we've received two new grants in the last little while that came directly out of the work that we've done on there. For some people, the project is over. For some of the team, they've moved on. They never want to talk about or learn about or research or write about value again in their entire lives. For others of us, there's still a lot of data and a lot of questions left to be answered. So that one is always tricky. And negotiating when you're finished with your key stakeholder is particularly important. And never forget that all during the course of these 4 years, life happened. We had births, deaths, cases of pneumonia. I had 5 of them on my own in 4 years. Promotions, change of institutions, computers, weight gain, loss, acquisition of expensive toys, PhDs completed, relationships ended and started, and Serbian dance parties. And I'll leave you with a Serbian dance party. Whatever you plan, there's a saying, it says, we plan, God laughs. So when you're planning for a project like this, just remember that life happens. Oh, finally, sorry, before my last point, you can expect tons of support from research services at AU. I have worked with many universities, either providing grants to them or getting grants and having to manage them. And I can tell you that the research services here at AU is the most accommodating of any that I have worked with. Doesn't mean it necessarily will always be easy, but you can always be sure that they will be in your corner and support you and do what you need for them to get done. So I will turn it over now to Stella to wrap it up, and then we'll take some questions.
Okay, so given what you've heard from Janice and quite what's involved in a project like this, it sort of begs the question, why would you ever take on a project of this scale? There has to be a good reason. It's usually because the research question needs it, but there's clearly a lot to collaborative work, and when you do it on a very large scale, such as this project, then you need to really think about it as you go on. So the first is to really answer a tough question. It starts with something that's going to be hard to define from one perspective only. It can be, as this work was, a situation where research into this area in the past had failed, and because the topic like value is incredibly difficult to pin down. It's a difficult thing to define. It means different things to different people and so on. So sometimes the question itself is just too difficult from one perspective. Another reason is that there may be a whole community of people involved in an area and you couldn't satisfactorily research a question without involving a bigger community. And it may be that the community is there but separated, and to run an interdisciplinary project on a scale like this builds that community in its own right. And that action of building the community may be an outcome that you want to see. I do believe, reading some of the MCRI stuff, that's exactly what they're looking for. They're looking to build a group of people who not just work together, but that build a community in understanding how some area operates, how research can go on in it. Clearly, there's an increase in a prominence of an individual researcher if they're working in a large community like this. Not just that they become known in a practical level or an interactive level with other researchers in that community, but that if it's done right, and if you're leading a community like this, if it's done right, then you gain a large amount of prominence. But clearly, and it's a wonderful learning experience, albeit exhausting. I mean, you learn a ton of stuff by working with other people. But it has to be done right, and you have to have the right time and support to commit to leading something on such a large scale. And that's not necessarily just an individual with their own ability, but it's their network to build relationships with the other people involved in the research. It's their access to an organisation who can provide them with the administrative and legal support that they need to do it. The last point on this slide, which I think is really quite clearly a real motivator, is that in some areas, work like this will drive the research agenda within a particular area of a field of research. And it may be that without a large-scale interaction of researchers, you can't actually move that research agenda forward due to isolated, competing ways of approaching a particular area. It's possible that you're going to need 2 or 40 heads being better than one in order to crack a particular area, but to see and have the vision about how the research agenda for a particular field might be moved forward. And it may be the only way that you can reach some consensus, even though that process in itself may not be all that easy. It might be the only route that you can get consensus in a research area to drive it forward, or that competing issues can actually be brought to bear in a constructive way on, at the same time within a big enough group where insight into that and a true new insight in moving it forward will actually happen. So there really are some true benefits for working in interdisciplinary research on a large scale. In terms of outcomes, this little slide indicates the outcomes so far of the value project in itself. And you can see that it's the type of result that you would expect to see from a research grant, but more, which is exactly what you would expect. With a large research team, you would expect to see journal papers, conference papers, presentations at practitioner groups, additional grants, which actually aren't on this slide, but Janice mentioned them, that work can continue based on the back of this work and more grants can be awarded. So it's what you would expect to see, but what isn't at first apparent and is a result in itself here is that many of these papers were written by authors who may not have written together if they hadn't been part of an interdisciplinary project in this way. And so one of the issues of interdisciplinary work is sometimes it's very difficult to work out how to get people to write together and find a place for it to be published. By working on a common goal, a common research project, you make these opportunities happen. They occur as a natural process of working in a large scale like this. People find people within this group that they have never met before. They can see that even though coming from a different management perspective, they have clear overlap in their way that they view the world, their philosophical ethos of how it all fits together. They go, they have an offline chat over lunch when you're together for a workshop. They have a couple of glasses of water in the evening together, or whatever their drink of choice, but they make that connection that they previously may not have made.
One of those papers was selected as the best paper for 2009 in one of the leading project management journals from a group of three colleagues that had a drink in the bar and wrote a paper, and it turned out to be the best paper for the year.
So it's the sort of results that you would expect, but sometimes they come about in a different way and from opportunities that you couldn't, that just spontaneously arise by being involved in something so large. And as we end, I'd like to just talk about how something like a research institute fits with this idea about collaborative research. One of the things that we're interested in at the Project Management Research Institute is to look at collaboration in project management. And this is partly because the funds to start up GEMRE were born out of the potential of the Researching the Value project, not just financially, but the network of people involved and the good relationship building that happened within that project and that network, and we can continue. And what we're doing there is building the network wider so that advanced practitioners who weren't involved can become involved. We can create a motivation and keep the motivation going so that when everybody's busy, there's a point at which, or a host for meetings, or a call for ideas, or come together, some body, a research institute, which keeps the motivation pattern going to allow and facilitate collaborations to occur. So we're providing the technology to get people in touch, but we also facilitate them being in touch. We coordinate ideas, we put out notices that say there's grants going on in this area and this area, and we bring together people, the value people, periodically to say, what would you like to do? So when we're talking about where the end point is, it's possible that if you have something like a research institute or a centre of research that can take the motivation and facilitation for collaborative research, and then this type of project doesn't really end, it evolves itself and it moves on. So we're very grateful to be able to have the Research Institute born out of this potential and to move it on as we can. And we're particularly concerned about making sure that the transfer of research from the Value Project, but also other areas from researchers and researchers who we weren't involved with, continues. And also what we've learned has a place to sit. So the lessons learned out of the Value Project sit in GEMRE. They have a place, they have a web presence, there's a point at which somebody can come to AU and say, well, we'd like to know about this aspect, or we've got this collaborative project and we know that one of your researchers did it. There's a point, a place where they can come and find out what we've learned and come and ask. So GEMRE is, in effect, not just a resource for project management, but it's an AU resource as well. And we would be happy to help whichever discipline you may sit in. If you have questions about collaborative research, if you're a project management researcher or you've touched on project management and you're interested in project management collaboration, then please do come and visit us at GEMRE. So we would like to turn over for questions now, and I guess, would we do it again? Well, would you do it again, Jen?
I'm not sure. but I certainly would be more than willing to help anybody who wants to think about what these things look like and what you need to plan for and think about. We've certainly learned a lot, and we've got methods and practices and tools that work, or at least we know what doesn't work, so we can help in that way. So I'm going to open it for questions, and if anyone wants to talk about this or anything else, we're here. Do we have to turn the mic off?
Oh, yes, probably. I'm just going to flash through the members of our team as we're taking questions, so you can see how many people we really were involved with.
Stella, we have no questions in the room at AU Central.
Okay then. Well, you know where to find us if you do have questions, if you're want to talk more about the project management, or about collaborative or interdisciplinary research, we'd be more than happy to talk to you at any time. Thanks for coming. Enjoy your lunch.
Thank you.